So in chapter 5, Paul now looks at a number of groups in the community and is advising Timothy on how best to deal with them, how best to handle these situations. And he starts quite simply, do not speak harshly to an older man, reminding us that Timothy's not really old enough to be a presbyter. So be respectful of the older men, but appeal to him as a father and to younger men as brothers, to older women as mothers and to younger women as sisters with absolute purity. Now the word purity is quite good. The Greek is hagneia. And hagneia is a word used in Greek writings, quite apart from the New Testament, for respect of the temenos, the sanctuary, the sacred place, say in a pagan temple. Well, only the priest would be allowed to go into certain sections and no one else would be allowed in. So that you have to recognize the sacred space and don't intrude into it. So if that's the image, and it is, this is rather a lovely word Paul's using here of Timothy with younger women. Treat them as sisters, but respect the sacred place. Well, you respect it for everybody, but it's particularly important for him, for obvious reasons, with a younger woman to recognize the sacredness of there. It would be lovely if you were like that with everyone, wouldn't it? I have this image of Moses taking his shoes off when he goes into the burning bush. And if you treated everyone, we do, well, I don't say we do, you mightn't, but people do barge into people's lives a bit and take over and intrude. And we talk about limits of our behaviour. Now, they can be just external or they can come from inside. Just a recognition of the sacredness of the other person is a beautiful thing to have for everybody. But he particularly accents it here with the younger women, and I think it's rather a lovely word to put for it because of the sacredness of it. Then he goes on and starts to talk about widows. And this will go for quite a few verses, and we need perhaps to get a couple of things just to remind ourselves of this. Today, there's a couple of assumptions that I have, and you might have them too. Today, there are many more widows around than widowers because of isn't a woman's life expectancy something like 5 years more than a man's, just in our culture at any rate. So there's plenty of women around who've lost their husband, who've buried their husband, rather than the other way. Please keep in mind that in Paul's society, that the reverse was true. Because of childbirth, particularly that, a lot of men were widowed, quite young even. So there would have been widows in the community, but I imagine it would be a smaller group than what we might imagine if we didn't think about it. But that's a little bit of guessing going on there. Now, when he talks about widows, it'll become clear very soon that he's, of course, help everybody in need. He's not saying don't help certain types, but he's accenting this group, and it seems to be a group that is recognizable publicly in the community as widows. He talks about a list, and he'll talk later. The assumption is that they've actually taken a vow of chastity, these women in this group. It's almost like, well, I don't know, I wouldn't say the beginnings of religious life, but there's something like that. They're women who've had their family. Celibacy on itself was a very rare thing in the ancient world. In Judaism, it was hardly known at all, which is one of the reasons why Jesus was a bit of a surprise, being celibate. Paul is also celibate at the time he's writing the letters. We don't know his background to that. We don't know whether he lost his wife quite young prior to his conversion. It's quite possible, because as a Pharisee, he would have been committed to the Pharisaic duty to have children and to, you know, multiply and fill the earth and so on. But keep in mind that celibacy is quite rare. In fact, Jesus, do you remember that famous saying of his when he says, there are eunuchs who are born that way? In other words, they can't have children. There are eunuchs made that way by man, meaning certain people are made eunuchs so that they can be, the harem can be protected against them, all that stuff. And he says, but there are eunuchs who make themselves that way for the sake of the kingdom of God. Some scholars suggest, it attracts me anyhow, that probably what Jesus is dealing with there is a slur. You know, that people said to him, people who didn't like him, and there were plenty of those, oh, you're a eunuch, like you're, because he's celibate, you can't have kids, that's why. You know, and Jesus is kind of coming back to them. Yes, I am, but he's reminding them that people can choose this for the sake of the kingdom, which of course becomes a very key text in the early church development of celibacy, which has a whole lot of reasons for it. In the clergy, it's got a lot of reasons to do with economics in the early church. But don't be too cynical about that. There's plenty of writing right through from the beginnings of when we've got writing that celibacy was chosen for the leader of the community because Jesus was celibate and because it is a very appropriate way of loving a large community of people, because you're everyone, you're not, you know, you belong to everyone. So there are very fine reasons for celibacy too. So now he's talking about these widows. Anyhow, let's read what he says and see if we can. There's obviously a problem that people are joining the group of widows and therefore being supported by the community. Remember, a widow is someone who's got no husband, but no children either. She's kind of, and no public life, no way of economic independence, so they're totally dependent. Well, honour widows who are really widows, he says. Now, if a widow has children or grandchildren, that's the children, grandchildren, should first learn their religious duty to their own family and make some repayment to their parents. Well, this is pleasing in God's sight. So the first obligation is not of the community, but of the family. So don't avoid your responsibility by getting the community to support them and then you go off and make your millions. The real widow, left alone, has set her hope on God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. So they've lived their life and now they're committing themselves, well, he'll see to a lot of things, care of the community too, but to prayer. And he's, of course, recommending that they focus now on deeper things than they were able to do, perhaps, in their childbearing years or whatever, in prayer. But the widow who lives for pleasure is dead even while she lives. Now, Paul isn't against pleasure, but if that's what they're living for, and they're missing the whole point of the gospel and of prayer and of community service, then they're wasting their life. Give these commands as well so that they may be above reproach. And he comes back, and whoever doesn't provide for relatives and especially for family members has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So reading between the lines, I assume that there's a problem in the community of the community resources being depleted by so many widows expected to living off the community and they can't afford it. So Paul's trying to sort this out a bit. And here comes the real sorting. Let a widow be put on the list. So here we are, we've got a formal public thing. If she's not less than 60 years old and has lived as a wife of one man, literally, been married only once. Now, she must be well attested for her good works as one who's brought up children, shown hospitality, washed the feet of the saints. That's the only other time in the New Testament we have that official, almost formal, symbolic statement that we get from the Last Supper of Jesus, wash one another's feet. So that it doesn't just mean wash feet, but you can see what it stands for and why it's there. Help the afflicted and devoted herself to doing good in every way. Here we're dealing with a 60-year-old woman who's been a very faithful member of the community. Her husband dies, she's destitute, well, the community lets look after her economically. But refuse to put younger widows on the list. Paul's preaching. When their sensual desires alienate them from Christ, they want to marry. Now, there's nothing wrong with wanting to marry. He'll say something in a moment that perhaps they ought to marry. But he says, and so they incur condemnation for having violated their first pledge. Well, the only sense I can make of that is that in joining the list of widows in their perhaps ambition, their goodness of heart, they're making a vow of chastity. They're going to belong to the list of widows, give their life to the community. They're not going to have family anymore. You know, they've had their family, but they're young. They're going to commit themselves to this. And Paul's saying, be careful of that because, well, they may desire to marry again. They may still think, oh, well, I could have a family with them and be attracted out of the vowed life that they'd committed themselves to. Besides that, he says, they learn to be idle. And as you're all smiling, gadding about from house to house, not merely idle, but gossips and busybodies saying what they shouldn't say. So again, I think this sheds light back on the earlier parts of the letter, what he said about women talking and all that kind of thing. There's clearly a problem of the liberation experienced by the women in the church that they haven't been prepared for, or that some are abusing or not knowing how to handle because they haven't been sufficiently prepared for it. And all this is going on. Saying what they shouldn't say, I guess, must be part of the heterodox teaching we looked at earlier about marriage and about a few other things. So, because of that danger, I would have younger widows marry. Don't join the list of widows. Be dependent on the community, and therefore you don't have to do anything because the community is supporting you economically. Now you're free to be idle, gad about, do all this thing. No, they're not ready for that. Yeah, they haven't matured enough and they haven't shown their qualities enough. So he says, I would have the younger widows marry, bear children and manage their households so as to give the adversary no occasion to revile us. For some have already turned away to follow Satan. Some have already left the faith because of all this. They've gone too far in committing themselves to celibacy, wrongly, unwisely. They're living off the community and they've got into bad habits and drifted. If any believing woman has relatives who are really widows, let her, that believing woman, assist them. Her relatives who are real widows. And let the church not be burdened so that it can assist those who are real widows.